My name's Frank, I'm an addict.
Hi, Frank.
Shit, man, I'm scared. Oh, fucking hell, what do I put myself through this? It is okay to say fucking hell, isn't it? It's too late now, and anyway.
Please do.
All right, yeah, Jesus Christ, this is one of these things, isn't it, that you hope nobody ever asks you, but if they don't ask, you think, well, what's wrong with my recovery? Why don't they ask me? And then they do, you think, oh, my God. And, Jesus Christ, man, those nerves are unbelievable. Very mood-altering. I felt like I was going to start crying there a while ago, really. I felt so nervous, man. Oh, I mean, I suppose because recovery really means a lot to me. It really does mean a lot, and I'm very passionate about recovery, and I'm not mealy-mouthed about it, that, you know, I don't... You know, I do think it is important what I say today, you know, and that, you know, I do want to give a message. So I put a lot of pressure on myself. A lot of pressure. You know, when did I start, man? I've got to watch. You've got to pace yourself as well, isn't it? 40 minutes. Okay, yeah. Anyway, I'm going to start from the beginning. Oh, Jesus. Anyway, okay, I mean, being really scared is a familiar feeling for me, I gotta say. And I kind of grew up in Ireland, as people might have gathered. And my parents are Irish, and all my family and that. And they're both alcoholics. My mother was on Valium for many years. My father was a rageaholic, and I grew up quite terrified a lot of the time, really terrorized. My father used to batter my mother really badly, you know, on a regular basis. My mother was a bit of a nightmare herself, you know, and she used to batter us. And, you know, and growing up, I just kind of remember as a kid running around screaming, crying a lot, you know, freaked out. Because my dad was smashing my mother around, and we were running, fucking, as little kids running around crying, fucking terrified. You know, so, yeah, it was really, it really fucked me up badly, really, I gotta say that, you know. Yeah, well, not nice at all. So it's no wonder I became an addict, really, you know. I mean, it's amazing, really. I mean, I didn't actually start taking drugs till I was about 16 and a half, you know, I don't know how I held out that long, to be honest, you know, and I don't know how I survived that long without taking drugs. Because I was a very, very messed up little kid, really. You know, I was very frightened all the time. I was very depressed, very insecure. Yeah. So, you know, when I remember when my friends told me they were smoking cannabis, I was really shocked because I was a clean-cut kid at that stage, you know. But I was really creeping up on me. Anyway, thought my dad and mum was coming to beat me. Anyway, yeah, I was kind of a clean-cut kid back then, you know what I mean? I didn't smoke. I never smoked a cigarette in my life. I'd never drank alcohol, you know, and I smoked this joint then at the end of the Adio, the alleyway back in Ireland. We have alleyways between the houses. And I remember when I smoked it, because I'd never smoked a cigarette before, and anyway, I started to get sick, you know. And as I was getting sick, I was leaning over the wall at the end, and as the last globules of sick came out of my mouth, you know, I remember just thinking, I like this, this feels nice. Yeah, I should have went straight off to an NA meeting, really. But, you know, I really thought, yeah, this is nice, you know, because you know when you're so fucking terrified, or if you're in so much pain, that it becomes normal. You know, and it was only when it went away for them few minutes after when I got stoned for the first time that I realized how fucking terrified I was, you know, and how much in pain I was. Anyway, so I started to smoke. And I'll tell you, but I've got to say now, and I've got to really make this clear, I mean, I loved fucking taking drugs, really loved taking drugs. I do not regret taking drugs, not for one second. If I hadn't started to take drugs, I'm pretty sure I'd be dead now. You know, the way of me coping back in those days was that I thought, okay, it's okay, you know, because I was so scared and so fucked up, man. But I thought, it's okay, because tomorrow I'm going to kill myself, you know, so I can get through today, because tomorrow I'll just fucking slip my wrist or throw myself off a building or throw myself in front of a train or something like that, you know. It's hard to throw yourself in front of a plane, but... Anyway, I might try that when I become Superman. Anyway, but I mean, it's really sad when you think about it, you know. And I used to look at old people and I used to envy them. I used to think, fuck's sake, man, at least they've only got a few more years to go with this, you know, because it was fucking torture. It was real torture, life was. So hallelujah, I found fucking drugs, man. Thank God, you know. And my life improved drastically when I found drugs in the beginning. Really, it was a fantastic revelation to me. You know, and I started to smoke cannabis, you know. I'd already had long, curly hair. I did have long, curly hair at one stage. It was lovely brown curly hair. I'm serious, I did. My mother used to love it as well, and she used to not let me get my hair cut because she thought I had lovely brown hair. It was lovely. It's long gone now, unfortunately. But anyway, you know, I used to think I looked like Jim Morrison. Yeah. I'd have a deep voice like Jim Morrison, you know. I mean, come on, baby, light my fire and all that. You know, when the music's over, and all those songs I used to listen to, you know. So I was already ready for drugs before I even started to use them, you know. I mean, the people I admired was, you know, Janis Joplin, you know, Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison, The Doors, David Bowie, all people who took copious amounts of drugs, you know, and they seemed cool to me. You know, and the books I liked to read was like Jack Kerouac and On the Road and fucking, you know what I mean, Free and Out There and fucking... You know what I mean? And taking lots of speed and smoking lots of cannabis and visiting all these mad places. I mean, I never got out of Ireland for them years. But I used to thumb up to Dundalk every now and again, or, you know, thumb down to Waterford. And I always had this little fantasy. I had this little fantasy that this beautiful woman would pull up and she'd do all these despicable kind of things to me. That never happened either, unfortunately. Although when I went to Germany, anyway, that's another story. So I, as you may hear, I was a bit of a fantasist as well, and that was something that kind of helped me to escape from reality. But I did love taking drugs, you know what I mean? But, you know, addiction being addiction, just keep checking the time every now and then. I don't want to peak too soon, you know what I mean? Because it's all downhill after that. I'm kind of lost when I started now. Anyway, I'm not sure, but anyway, he's going to warn me anyway. So addiction being addiction, as we know, it progressively fucking gets worse and our tolerance grows more, you know. So smoking cannabis wasn't enough after a while, so, you know, started to add things to that concoction, you know, smoking big bongs, kind of thing. I remember when my sister got married and I was best man because she was marrying my best mate, you know. I mean, we went down... had about 6 points of lager. I mean, he had more. He's an alcoholic, you know. And I didn't have a problem with drink. At least I thought, anyway. And then smoked a load of these bongs, you know. Oh, fucking hell, man. And I was stoned down my head, and they were getting married, and they were giggling at the top, and oh, that was fucking, oh, good fun. Good, clean fun, you know. And then... yeah, I mean, it was just such a great time. I mean, I really, you know, I came over to London, seeing David Bowie live, I seen, you know, Pink Floyd live doing The Wall back in 1980, so, and I just thought, wow, man, what a life I've got, man. This is fantastic, isn't it? What a guy. Anyway, you know, and I thought books should be wrote about me, you know. Delusional, man, I'm telling you. You know, I went and lived in Germany for a while. That's where that little story about the woman pulled up in the car, actually. Yeah, it's a nice, fond memory. Anyway, I won't go into that now. But again, it was great, you know, and quickly we went over there. First, I was drinking these big fucking, you know what they're called in Germany, Steins or something, whatever they're called. Anyway, you drink three of those and you don't remember anything after that. Yeah, but you hear funny stories the next day, and anyway. Or you end up in the police station, which what happened to us, you know, and that's a funny story. But it certainly wasn't funny at the time. We met this mad guy at this dance, and drunk, of course, you know, and he brought us back to his hotel. He was big, tall, blonde-haired, Aryan kind of master race type person. No offence, man. but he had cannabis. You know what I mean? He had fucking dope, you know what I mean? So, of course, we were going to go back. I suspected there was something not quite right about the guy, but it was okay. He had drugs. So three, me and two of my mates, my brother-in-law, and then my mate Brendan went back. And after a little while, he started to do all these moves, swinging around. And then he caught my brother-in-law, flushing the head, knocked him out. I thought, hang on, this doesn't feel right. So I said, hey, mate, hey, what's going on, man? This ain't cool. Because I was a bit of a dude back then, you know? So he came over and started slapping me around the head. I didn't like that at all, man. I'm not that brave, really. But I looked at my mate Brendan, and Brendan had glasses. He's in the fellowship now, he's a long time clean. But anyway, and he took them out and put them in his top pocket, so I knew what was going to happen. Yeah. And he caught your man, cracking the flush in the side of the head. I said, quick, grabbed him, and I started punching the head of him because I was so fucking scared. This guy is a lunatic. So he dashed off out of the place. It was like monsoon rains. We were in the Bavarian Alps, you know. And we didn't know where the fuck we were, you know. This was a forced night in Germany, a serious forced night. I'm running down the place, you know, and then realised, you know, my brother-in-law has left his Aran jumper. Aran jumpers are very nice, by the way. Yeah, and they're expensive as well. Plus one of his runners and one of his socks. So he thought, we have to go back. So we turned around and started heading back up the mountain, because it was up mountains. I mean, Bavaria, by the way, there's lots of mountains in there, yeah? And we were up in Bad Vesias, if anybody wants to check it out. And when we turned to go back up towards the place, he was coming down the road with a fucking axe. You know, this has really happened, I tell you. So, you know, being a little bit sus, we thought we'd better fucking run. So we're running, banging on doors, please help, 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 all that kind of nonsense. People think we're just total lunatics, because we are total lunatics anyway, you know what I mean? Eventually somebody lets us in, they don't understand what we're talking about, we call the police, blah, blah, blah. Police come along, and who turns up with the police but this fucking lunatic, yeah? And he's telling them, that we've beaten him up and robbed his money. Now, he is beaten up now. And we don't know what to fucking say, you know? So we spend the night in a jail. But anyway, after that, the holiday got much better, and I said it was a fantastic holiday. It was a fantastic holiday. But anyway, these are the type of funny stories that are not funny when they're happening, because I was really frightened in that walk. Because I was sitting there in that prison cell, in the jailhouse, or wherever you call them, in the police stations, and there was blood splattered on the walls. Now remember, I'm a fucking innocent little kid coming out of Dublin, yeah? A little Catholic innocent little boy. I don't know fucking damn, you know what I mean? I'm 19 or something, or 20 actually, I was 22 or something. But I felt like I was only a kid. I mean, I was only a kid. And all I can remember is Nazi movies, you know what I mean? I'm thinking they're gonna come in and they're gonna beat the fuck out of me. You know, I'm a foreigner. It didn't happen. What happened is the next morning, they came and just said, we're going to let you go, you know, and we were wondering why they were going to let us go, but apparently the chief went up to speak to this guy and he attacked the chief or the, whatever you call them, sergeants or something. So that was a bit of luck. I was probably wasted a bit of time on that story, really. Anyway, okay, so I got back there. I moved over to London because it's very hard to get drugs in Ireland, I've got to say. It's really, well, it was back then. Actually, it's quite easy now. But back in the day, I'm a bit old, by the way, just for those who didn't realise it, with grey hairs. It's not blonde hair. I do like believe it's blonde hair, but it is grey. And when I moved to London, I remember the first time taking heroin. Now, I was not highly anxiety. I've suffered a lot from anxiety, you know what I mean? And I've suffered a lot, and nobody's suffered as much as I have, yeah? I'm serious. I mean, I'm really fucking suffered a lot, you know. Still nervous, man. Anyway, but I found heroin and that was fucking fantastic, man. Jesus Christ, man. Just like a warm blanket being wrapped around you. And just like as if your mum was kind of rocking you and it's like everything's okay. My mum never did that to me, anyway, because I never really got... Anyway, you know how much I've suffered. Anyway, so what happened is that I started smoking on the foil as people normally do then, and then what happened then is I started having asthmatic attacks. you know, because it's not very good for you smoking heroin, for those that don't know, you know. And especially smoking her off the foil, because there's all that dirt shit and all that shit that goes in it, you know. So I have an asthmatic attack, so I ended up in hospital and fucking going on nebulizers, and my partner fucking... I met this woman, a beautiful woman at this stage, you know, fucking hell, man. It really fucking crushes me when I think what I put her through. Yeah, so, I mean, I came to a very rational decision then, you know what I mean? If you have an asthmatic attack and the heroin is affecting you that badly, smoking on the foil, obviously you've got to find a different way to use heroin. So I started to inject heroin. And then I suppose things weren't so funny anymore. After, you know, what started to happen is things started to get very disturbing and very sad. Yeah. Really fucking sad, depressing, and it was, because it was amazing, there was about 16 of us came over from Dublin, you know, there's a few of them dead now, and we were all just fucking young, kind of, who just wanted to have fun, and a lot of us got destroyed, really destroyed by that, and we were really good friends, really fucking good friends, we really had a real bond, you know. But after a while, we were ripping each other's gyros off, you know, we were fucking rubbing each other, we were, can't, hey, fucking trust it. All that carry on was going on. All that nonsense started to happen, you know. You know, and yeah, it was quite really sad, really, really sad. You know, and I wouldn't have been so bad, but, you know, I ended up meeting this woman, Caroline's her name. And, I mean, an absolutely fantastic woman, the most wonderful woman in the world you could ever meet. Kind, gentle, considerate. And when I met her, I fell fucking madly in love. And I stopped using heroin for about a year and a half. Still smoked cannabis and blah, blah, blah. And there was even at one stage I stopped doing cannabis for a while. And I was fucking terrified. And I was fucking depressed. And my head was fucked. And that was really scary, because I thought, at that stage, I started to realize that taking drugs was a problem. But when I stopped taking drugs, I was fucked. Oh, yeah. And the sad thing is, really sad thing is the damage I caused this woman, who fucking never, ever, ever did anything ever to harm me. Never. Yeah, I lied, I fucking blamed her, I fucking robbed money off her. You know, we had a little kid, you know, a daughter, Zoe. Beautiful, fucking amazing child, you know, I was at the birth, you know, everything's fucking... I thought that'll sort me out, you know, I'll come around now. But I didn't, I was just fucking... I couldn't stop, you know, I didn't know about powerlessness then. I hadn't got a fucking clue. And at one stage, I mean, I thought I had a problem with heroin, and I thought I had a big problem with heroin until I started to smoke crack cocaine, then I realized, fucking hell. But anyway, but I had no idea that I had a problem with addiction. I had no fucking idea, you know, so I hadn't got a chance, you know. I mean, at times I stopped doing crack and I stopped doing heroin, but I never stopped drinking, or I never stopped taking Valium, or I never stopped, you know, taking methadone or fucking... I'd do whatever, you know, and I was still fucked, you know, and then even when I'd go a little period of trying desperately not to, I thought I was in recovery when I went on a script, you know, I really did. You know, I remember when I went into treatment the first time, you know, and people were talking about this their second time around and being in recovery before, I was saying, yeah, this is my second time around as well, yeah. Yeah, I was in recovery, yeah, yeah, I was on a script for a few years. Yeah, and I remember there was a period that I didn't use on top of it. I don't know if that was actually true, actually, but anyway. Anyway, so it just got worse and worse and fucking worse, you know what I mean? And then, and I couldn't cope with it. I really couldn't fucking cope with it. You know, I was injecting heroin. I had track marks up and down my fucking arms. I was 8 stone. I knew I was destroying this woman. I had this little daughter that was running around, beautiful fucking daughter, who'd find a needle. You know, to find a fucking needle. You know, and Karen go, where, who did, what? And I'd go, a fucking bastard, Bren. or Steve or fucking George or cunts, man, left that. What a... They won't be getting him back in this house again. But of course, it was my fucking needle. You know, and that's how bad I got, you know? It's fucking horrible. I really don't know how I ended up in recovery. It's fucking amazing. It's a miracle. I don't know what the fuck... Well, because I was more desperate before than I was when I actually got into recovery. I don't know what the fuck happened. But I know a few of my friends ended up going to treatment. And some of them came out and started to go to NA. And I went to my first NA meeting in the Maudsley Hospital in South London. My Carleen came with me. You know, and I know the main reason I went there is because I thought, if I don't do something about it, she's going to fucking leave me. She's going to tell me it's all over, you know. So I went there, and I was fucking stoned. You know, and the most thing I was obsessing about all the way through that meeting was, because I kept... fucking hell. I hope nobody noticed that I just, you know... And I'd look around and go, oh, I've got away with it, it's all right. I mean, I do know today now that if anybody's stoned in a meeting, it's fucking obvious. And we all notice. It's fucking obvious, really obvious, man. Yeah. So if you had a little bit, you know, you're not getting away with it. Anyway. But I didn't come to recovery then. I mean, I really did believe when I went there and I listened to some of the people talk about their problems. I really just thought, well, okay for yous. Okay, yous had a few little fucking problems, but none of yous have been abused like me. None of yous have suffered like I've fucking suffered. You know, I mean, it's okay for you, all right. You know, you don't have to use. You fucking don't have to use. I have to use. And wait till you hear my story, then you'll know why I'm going to have to use. You know? And I really believed that, you know, and so I didn't think NA was, I didn't think this was going to work for me, I really didn't. But, you know, went on more and fucking more desperation, more despair, and fucking going to, you know, getting your script, and you go into the woman, you know, you're ready to cut down, oh no, not this week, you know, I'm having a difficulty, you're ready to go, and that goes on, and then Carleen went off to her sister's, you know, and then she told me she didn't want to be with me ever again, you know, the last couple of years, we never slept together, I stayed in one room, she stayed in the other, and kind of... And I felt really sad and self-piteous, you know, and I thought, fucking hell, man, she wants to leave me now just when I'm trying to stop using. What a fucking liberty, eh? But, you know, really, that's been going on for about 10 years. I don't know what happened. Whatever happened anyway is that I went one day to this woman, you know. Christmas was all on my own, you know, Karen had gone off to her sister's. I wasn't invited. Took Zoe with her. And I was all alone in a wallowing in deep, deep self-pity. I don't think I could score a lot either. So you know how when you're clucking, there's nothing like a bit of self-pity when you're clucking. And suddenly you get really emotional when you're clucking, don't you? You know what I mean? You cry for the... Oh, so fucking hell! Alive! All that kind of carry on, yeah? Anyway. Which is fantastic. Anyway. So I went to this woman and I said, look, I really fucking need to stop using drugs, you know what I mean? She went, okay, you know, I said, I really desperately need to stop using drugs, you know what I mean? She said, okay, I'll try and get you in somewhere. I said, look, it's really important I get somewhere near London because I want to be near my family. I need to be near my family. You know, Carleen didn't want to fucking see no hide or hair of me at that stage. And then she came and had a few calls, came back into the room. She said, look, the only place... available is a place down in Plymouth. You know, are you willing to go there? And I said, no, actually, that didn't. What happened is the week before, she said, look, there's a 4-month waiting list to go into this place near London. And I said, 4 fucking months? I'll be dead in 4 months. I really did. I thought I'd be dead in 4 months. I could have been, I don't know. So, you know, she made more calls and came and said, would I be willing to go there? And I said, I'd be willing to go to Timbuktu. And then fucking 3 weeks later, after being... busted for fucking possession of heroin, you know, I'd already done a little bit of time in ones with prison. Really fucking mad, you know, when they busted me, I thought, wouldn't you get the dealer, man? He's gone that way. You're fucking coming after me with me few little bags. Fucking liberty. That's because I was Irish, you see? Always picking us, you know? It's not bad enough 800 years of oppression, man. You know? Really sad. But anyway, So I ended up in this 12-step treatment centre. I didn't know anything about 12-step. 12-step, I didn't know what the fuck they were talking about. But I went there, you know, and I was, remember, I was, fucking hell, man. Talk about terror. I mean, I did the 7-day detox there. I only did 7 days back then. I know he's all a little namby-pamby these days and do 13 days and fucking few weeks and all that. But back then, you know, 7 days. Coming off heroin, crack cocaine, methadone for years. I was... So they gave me the NA basic text, and they said, okay, because I didn't sleep, obviously, you know, I want you to read the first, I don't know many chapters, read the first so many chapters over and over again. So, you know, a good recovering addict, as I was, straight on detox. I was reading, and I was at night, and you know, they do the old fucking leg shuffle. It was January 1995, by the way. And then the old fucking shuffle, and oh, Jesus Christ, and I'm sweating. And then you know, you think you're just about getting off, and they're waking you up to give you the more medication, and fucking Christ, just getting off to sleep, you fucking bastards. Oh, like. And then they swirl you down into group. And when I went into group, it was just like being at home. You know, I said, this is really familiar to me, you know? People shouting and screaming at themselves, you know? Telling you, fucking cunt, you're in denial and all that. You know, this is just like home. This is where my family was. We shouted and screamed at each other and told each other how we felt. You fucking, all that kind of carrying. But I tell you, I have never experienced the kind of terror that I felt there, you know. I still had brown hair when I went in there. It was starting to get a little lank and greasy, but I still had brown hair. And believe me or not, and I'm not really joking, it was like trauma there. It was like a trauma. A real fucking trauma. I was so fucking terrified, but I couldn't tell anybody that. And I was so frightened, and I was so sad, and I was so corrupt, and I was so scared. You know, but at night I'd cry myself to sleep, and in the group I'd go, who the fuck do you think you're telling me? You kind of fuck. All that kind of nonsense. And I wanted to fight the counselor, and I wanted to punch someone out. And this guy was desperately trying to save my life. And I don't know why, but they kicked me out of this place, man. Can you believe it? What a fucking liberty. Yeah. And I was doing the best. And you know, I still know today, I was doing the best I could. I really was. And I still think they were right to throw me out, by the way. And thank God they did, because I was due to go on to secondary treatment down there, yeah? And I thought, yeah, let's settle down in Plymouth. I hope nobody's from Plymouth. It's a beautiful place, actually. And the moors are wonderful. And you can scream and all that, and it's fucking great, man. The courage to go and scream down the moors, and then you start crying. Anyway. So they kicked me out of this place, you know? And I came back to London. And I knocked at the door. Caroline opened the door, and she burst into fucking tears because I was due to go to secondary. She didn't think I was coming home. She weren't grateful to see me at all. She was fucking talking, oh my fucking God. You know, I'm presuming this is what she's thinking, but you know, I think the tears weren't, oh hallelujah, he's home, home, the love of my life. I was, oh my fucking God, man, I've already been through years of fucking mayhem, and now he's back. The fucking lunatic. Ooh. So, you know, how's it going? Oh, yeah, explain what happened. But what happened is before I even got home, I rang my mate Brendan. He was in recovery. I said, Brendan, you know, you don't believe what they've just done. And I can't believe it. They've thrown me out of this place. I mean, I don't know what for. Anyway, Brendan was away. Fucking imagine him being away on the weekend I got thrown out, man. I couldn't believe it. So I went up to see my other mate, who was 3 years in recovery at this stage, of sorts. He'd stopped going to meetings, so he wasn't actually really. But anyway, let's not be judgmental. He's a lovely guy. And he's still clean today, actually. You know, who am I to judge? But I do. Anyway. So I went up to see him. I went up to see him, and I tell you, man, I was... The poor guy, and God knows, at least he must have learned some tolerance and patience, because I was this and talking, telling him about the fucking deep insights, and you know, and I did this step one, and look where I did this, and I did that, and I did that, fucking end, and I feel this way, and I feel that way, and what am I going to do, and blah, 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 and you know. And then, you know, and then I was unleashed onto the fucking NA meetings, you know what I mean? And I tell you, I loved NA, really loved NA. I went in there, and I thought, okay, now this is my chance to tell you how much I've suffered. You know what I mean? And it's a fantastic thing, NA, isn't it? Nobody interrupts you, you know? Wow, you get 40 minutes to share. Unbelievable. I've got 15 minutes left or something.
You've got another 10 minutes.
10 minutes, man. Okay. Anyway, so it's fun. So I fell in love, Rene, and I came straight out into a pink cloud, because I'd just been to fucking Auschwitz. You know what I mean? I just escaped the gas chambers. That's how it felt, at least to me. The torture chambers. I came to NA where people sat and listened to me and really showed me love and patience. You know, I got myself a sponsor in the first week, you know, because I went to meetings. I don't know why I was really blessed, really blessed. When I went to the meetings and he said, okay, do 90 meetings in 90 days, get yourself a sponsor, walk the steps, do some service. Never once did I think, what the fuck are they talking about? Who the hell? What? No. So I thought, okay, 90 meetings in 90 days. Okay, that's all right for yous. Yous are a little bit sick. I'm very sick, and I've suffered a lot. So I did 173 meetings in the first 90 days. I got a sponsor in the first week, and I walked through the steps in my first year of recovery. And that helped to keep me floating on that pink cloud. And there is a few people here that were around when I first came around, and I used to piss people off, man. People used to come in sharing about their problems and their feelings and how hard they were finding it. And I'd come, I'm Frank, I'm an addict, and I'm so grateful to be clean, man. It's just fantastic. It's sunny, man. It's great. And I've been back to Ireland and this and that, and I'm doing that, and blah, blah, blah. And fucking, yeah. I'm reading the book and blah, blah, blah. And I'd come out with the sayings that I'd heard, and I thought, you know, this, you know, someone said, like, keep her in the day. I thought, that's fantastic. I must tell everybody about that. You know, it's a great day at a time. Easy does it. So, and it was a real revelation to me, the steps. Really, real fucking revelations. And I, Jesus Christ, I mean, I am so grateful I walked, I was blessed with that, you know, okay, let's go for it. And my sponsor loved me, man. He fucking loved me, man. You know what I mean? Because every week we used to meet up, and because I used to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning. I had a little desero. I used to have my little roll-ups because I was really sick back then. I used to smoke cigarettes. Well, roll-ups actually, because they were cheaper. And I'd have my little things, and you know what I mean. And I'd write for a few hours. You know, reading, writing, step walk, go to a meeting, go for coffee. Talk the hind ass off the people there. Tell them about how wonderful recovery is. And then, And it was fucking fantastic. It was really great. It's so simple. It was so simple. And I did that for about a year and a half, you know. You know, I said to myself, like, I'll give myself a year. I'll give myself a year. And I went to, I mean, I never did less than 90 meetings in my first year, in 90 days in my first year of recovery. You know, but I went back to college when I was a year and a half clean. I started to do a kind of a course, and then I went, and then a year and a half clean, I went back and did start doing voluntary work in Pentonville Prison. What a fucking, so obviously had a little bit of issues there, you know what I mean? But you know, I couldn't believe that they actually would allow me to help them in there. You know, I couldn't fucking believe it. You know, I remember someone asked me, you know, would you be interested in doing some voluntary work? So what, me? You know, and then I went for the little interview, and the man says, okay, well, how many days can you do? And I said, well, how many days do you want me for? Yeah. So I was one of those, oh, what a blessing people are like that. You don't get them there anymore. They do one day voluntary work, 2 days were a squeeze. You know, and then, so I was doing 1 day in college and then 4 days voluntary work, and I did that for years without getting paid. Well, for a year and a half maybe. And then started, you know, and I started to get addicted to going to colleges courses and doing diplomas in the evenings and doing all that stuff. And what happened is, you know, way back early on, my partner took me back, Caroline, because what she was most scared of was that I'd go and use again. And I suppose she started to see that I was a bit obsessed about this recovery lark, you know. And I've never felt like using, ever, since I got clean, never. I've never had a craving in recovery. I don't know what it's like, thank God. But I do know what it's like to have a craving to do a lot of other destructive things, believe me. Remember those fantasies about that girl pulling up in the car? Okay, you get the gist. Anyway, but it was really great, you know. I mean, the last 5 minutes, yeah? Fantastic, you know. I mean, I've got to say for me, I mean, doing that four step four for me was the most important thing I've ever done in my life. You know, I did those resentment columns, you know, because I mean, I was a very resentful person, you know, because as you may have gathered, I was a little bit of a victim, a real fucking victim, You know, I was abused, I was battered, I was this, I was that. You know, so, you know, I got this list and I wrote down my mother. You know, she abused me, she battered me, she never showed me love, affected my self-esteem, you know, caused me fear, personal relationships. You know, and then, you know, my father used to batter me, used to beat my mother, I hate him, the fucking, all that, you know, and my brothers and sisters, you know, all the men, women, the children, fucking upper class, the two fucking easy bastards, you know, the middle class again, you know, the working class, I shouldn't be part of those, fucking far too good, you know, the fucking Irish, you know, fucking bunch of bleeding, anyway. And the fucking English, eh? Those dirty, rotten bastards, eh? 800 years of oppression. It's the only reason I went to prison was because I was Irish. It's nothing got to do with all those fraudulent claims I was doing. It's because I was Irish. I mean, I was always trying to get back all that money that just took from us. You know what I mean? Do you remember during the famine when we were starving? These were coming taking our grain. I've still been hungry ever since. It's a wonder I don't have an eating disorder. I tell you, man. So anyway. So a lot of great things happened, you know. You know, I had another child in recovery, Jesse, my little boy. Fucking beautiful little kid. My daughter's 15 now, going to a school that costs me a fortune. My little boy Jesse is fantastic. You know, the greatest things feelings I've had is coming home from work, turning the key, my little boy running down the hall, running up, giving me a hug and squeezing me and going, "Daddy, Daddy, I love you." Fucking hell, man, what a beautiful thing. You know, I went over a 12-step my younger brother, David. You know, he's nearly 11 years clean himself. You know, we did a little bit of work on my older brother, Jimmy. He's 10 years clean in November. He will be 10 years clean. And my brother will be 11 years clean as well. I know they will be because they got a sponsor. They walk the steps, they do service. They go to meetings. And it's been fantastic. You know, I've gone to India 7 years in a row. The last 7 years I've gone to India every winter. Fucking beautiful. And it's really easy to be spiritual when you're on holiday with no responsibilities, lying on the beach, going to fucking restaurants where it costs you nothing really. Oh, it's a beautiful thing. I mean, I do love recovery. You know, I do love recovery. And I'm not saying I don't get my bad days. I do get my bad days because sometimes you people don't behave properly. You know, sometimes I get those difficult people who don't listen to what I'm fucking saying and won't do what I'm telling, what I know they should do, and I know what's best for you to do. And it's so frustrating when people don't fucking understand that, isn't it? It really is, really frustrating, you know. But anyway, I'll wind down now, yeah? In about a minute, yeah? Do you know another thing is my daughter calls me a time freak. I don't like being late. I like being on time. I hate other people being late. So I want to finish dead on time. So I've finished the way I started is that I'm really fucking passionate about recovery. I love recovery. I really fucking love it. I just think I'm so blessed to be clean, you know. It's so fantastic to wake up each morning and not want to use drugs. And it's only when I do chairs and talk about my using that I really get in touch with how grateful I am. And talk about how desperate I was for so many years, you know, sticking needles in myself. You know, fucking the depravity that I went to. You know, and I'm in recovery now and I don't have to do any of that. Because it's so fucking easy to look around at all the other people who are about as long clean as me and think, he's got a better car than me. He gets more money than me. All that nonsense. Like as if that's important. Really, that ain't important. You know, what important is, you know, that I feel okay about myself. My daughter loves me. My partner loves me. Little Jesse, man, he's the fucking most beautiful little kid in the world. And I have love in my life, you know. What I've craved for all of my life I've got today. And that is so fantastic, it really is. Anyway, I'd need another 20 minutes to finish that story off. But anyway, I am a little bit grandiose as well. Anyway, but really, thanks, thanks, Jason, for asking me. You're not Jason, by the way. You know that, don't you? But anyway, so, yeah, and thanks for listening, yeah? Cheers.
Thanks.